Well, well, well. Y'all, this is such a fun episode. I am going to be joined in just a moment by my dear Ash John's daughter, my dearest sister. She's stepping in for Chan last minute. We chatted at 11 p.m. Tuesday night. So that's why this podcast is a little late this morning coming out. But we chatted late last night. She stepped in for Chan, and it's truly just a conversation that is two sisters shooting the breeze, zero filter, zero regard for how the conversation is going to be, you know, just completely not holding back. So I'm jumping on beforehand to issue a few disclaimers, a few sincere disclaimers. First of all, the audio quality, my audio quality is terrible. I don't know what happened. Ashley was not trained that she needed to inform me that I sounded like I was, you know, whispering into a tunnel 100 feet away. She didn't know that she needed to let me know about that. I'm not blaming her. I'm blaming her.
Today, I'm joined by the one and only Ash John's daughter, filling in for Chandler. Welcome to the pod, Ash.
Hey, I'm glad to be back.
So nice of you to join us. Do you feel like there's a little delay, or did you intentionally pause before you?
That was intentional.
Okay. Just making sure. I was like, oh no, another technical issue. We have spent 20 minutes trying to get this train on the tracks. So can't call AAA again. Glad we're working. Ashley, are you okay with me calling you Ashley, or is it a firm Ash?
Family can call me Ashley for sure.
Wow. How nice. Okay. So I was going to do a solo episode today, but then I figured why not just harass you and try to get you on with me and try to take away some of your free time. She's going through a stressful time. She has a lot on her plate. You know, how does it feel to have a sister like Chandler be so high up in corporate America? That's my first question for you, Ashley.
You know, that's a good question. You know, mostly I just like tease Chandler about where she works.
She's just like single-handedly responsible for like,
I mean, mostly I just send her like Alex
the tanking self-esteem teams. Of teenage girls across this country.
Right. I mean, mostly I just send her Alex Jones memes to like troll her, but like, I mean,
Chandler is basically responsible for Russia interfering in our election. So if you want someone to blame, you know, let's burn Chandler at the stake.
No comment. No comment into which way our elections are fortified. That's all I'll say.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's get into some unpopular opinions. You know, you have, I would say all of your opinions are unpopular. Is that fair?
That's quite accurate, I would say.
I feel like every time I talk to you, it's like, well, this is off the record. No one can know this. But, and then some furtive, whispered, like cloaked opinions. So let's get into it. What's an opinion you have that you think people would scoff at?
So should we go from like, I mean, I kind of like jotted down a few of these. Should we go in order from like least spicy to most spicy
for the podcast? You're organized or and ready like, to go.
More yeah. I jotted down a few. Okay. I mean, if we're going to start with the least spicy, I would say yeah. Like salt and vinegar is probably the best flavor of potato chip.
Okay, that's definitely like, okay, don't you feel like that flavor palette or that palette, the appreciation of a peppercini, of that vinegary taste, it's something you develop, like it's like an adult tongue.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I literally remember like being on like a road trip for like, I think it was like EFY or youth conference or something, and just being like 12 years old, 14 years old, whenever that was, like the young age where you could start doing that. And I literally remember like being in a van filled with teenagers and youth leaders and like watching one of my youth leaders eat an entire bag of like salt and vinegar chips. And I think I stared at her in open disgust like the entire time.
Honestly, it just seems so disgusting and like kind of like a lack of dignity to that preferred flavor. Like, why can't you just have like why can't you have a cool, stately Dorito, nacho cheese Dorito? That's my question. Okay. Just get some decorum, bitch. Why are you, you know, debasing yourself in such a way?
It is the least dignified flavor to eat, because it's like, even if you look at like all these other flavors, like, you know, even like sour cream and chive or like barbecue or whatever, like somehow like salt and vinegar manages to be like the most like stinky or whatever.
It's stinky, like, exactly. And it's strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a sour cream and onion, as stately as it is, isn't enough for you. It doesn't pack enough of a punch, you know? You got to have right. that pungent, odor rich, you know?
I'm admitting on the podcast, if I were to choose a bag of chips just to eat, like, yeah, like sour cream or not, no, salt and vinegar is like the tastiest layer.
I was just taking James to the movies for her birthday, and she got an icy, and I looked over and I just like had this moment. I was like, nothing about that icy looks good to me. Like right. nothing. I would never even take one sip, but as a kid, I would have wanted to drink the whole thing.
So, okay. So this is something I have not looked up. I have not looked up. So this is maybe totally 100% fake news, but something I've actually heard, I don't know, I read this somewhere and it somewhere made sense to me, is that kids, that the reason that your flavor palette changes from when you're adult to when you're a kid is that like when you're a kid, you actually like more of your taste buds are like alive or present or whatever. And that like as you become like grow older and older, it's like a lot of the taste buds that can sense bitter compounds and different things, they actually somehow die off or they aren't replaced or something like that. And so that's like why broccoli, because I remember eating Brussels sprouts as a kid and I remember thinking like, wow, these are absolutely disgusting. But then eating them as an adult, it's like, you know, it's, you can actually taste like the good flavor of them.
Right.
Yeah. Like they actually, that's actually like, you know, speaking in terms of evolution, that's some sort of protective mechanism, you know, because like toddlers or little kids will just go and just pick up stuff off the floor and eat it, that they actually have like more sensitive taste buds to, and that like when you're an adult, you can have the stronger or more bitter tasting things and they don't taste as offensive.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense on some level. Although I will say I did experience a distinct shift from wanting primarily sweet things to wanting primarily salty things and spicy things between, I would say, like teenage years to late 20s. Like that shift absolutely happened.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Like, don't you feel like there was a time in your life when you would have happily just had like a few cookies and like ice cream?
Like sweet things were way more interesting.
Way more important.
Right. Versus like, yeah, like the classic like brownies versus potato chips or something like
that. Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. All right, we digress. Okay, let's get spicier. Our taste buds are dull. Our listeners, they need more.
Okay. How about people look cool when they smoke cigarettes?
Honestly, I think we should bring it back. Like, I think it's worth the glam. You know?
I'm like fully stepping out of my role as a healthcare provider here. Like, fully like stepping, like I'm fully divesting for the moment from my role as like a licensed healthcare provider and just saying like, yeah, like if anybody from DARE in middle school told you that like cigarettes aren't cool, sorry, they were lying.
Yeah, no, that was a bunch of bullshit. When you're in Europe and you see 12-year-olds on the street smoking cigarettes, you just think these people know how to live, you know?
Okay, wait, let's go with one of your, what are one of your unpopular opinions?
Okay, so this is one, I personally think that there's no way that vegetables and lettuce and like greens are really like very like good for you or important for the human body. That to me is a myth. I think it's fake news. I think it's a conspiracy.
Okay, so interesting. So you think that like greens are oversold in terms of their potential nutritional value?
For sure. I think it's all a hoax as in terms of all things vegetables and greens. And this is why. I think that if you are a Homo sapien, hunter-gatherer, Neanderthal, whatever, and you're trying to figure out what to eat, Mother Nature would not have packaged her most nutrient-rich offering in a disgusting, like, spinach leaf covered in sand that what you have to just, like, shake off the sand and put that bitter leaf in your mouth. Like, how on earth did we ever eat vegetables before they came in a stir-fried wok? That's my question.
Okay, I see what you're saying here. I think that, like, okay, so I definitely see what you're saying here. I think that maybe, like, where the disconnect is like, I don't think, like, that necessarily, like evolution, like, always goes in the direction of, like, okay, this is, like, what allows optimum health. I think sometimes evolution goes in the direction of, like, this is what allows this species to survive in this niche, you know? So there's that. And I think, like, some of the reason why greens are, like, you're right, I think they are oversold, like, in the sense that, like, especially, like, when in the forms that people are eating them, like if you have, like, a giant salad or something like that, and you just eat it just like the raw greens or whatever, just like in lettuce form, a lot of those are just going to go right through people undigested because we don't have four stomachs like ruminants, right, or whatever, like, you know, right. Like, so I think that that's absolutely true. I think that, like, maybe, like, the intended message of that is, like, most people with an average diet would do well to replace, like, one of their, like, meals that they're normally eating with, like, a salad-based meal. Like, most people, like, aren't, like, hurting for, like, a lot of meat-based nutrients. They're more, like, they have health problems because they're eating foods that are too calorie dense, right, too, you know, and so the overselling of vegetables comes in.
That's another unpopular opinion I have. The best thing you can do for your health is just eat a little less. That's another unpopular opinion.
That's actually extremely well studied. They've done it with rats. They've done it with peoples that living to some degree in a state of some, like, not total, but just like, just being, there's no doubt that, like, being slightly underfed versus being overfed, like, the being slightly underfed is just leads to an extension in life.
I honestly feel better. Like, when I descended upon Salt Lake City from my, you know, month-long gorging myself experience in Europe, not really gorging, but just kind of eating more than I normally do,
right,
I'm like thrilled to take a break from food. Like, so thrilled to just go, like, eat light for a little while. Like, I don't know. I feel better.
Yeah. No, it's interesting how, like, like food is, like, I mean, there's a reason they say that, like, hunger is the best seasoning, because it's, like, honestly, when you're eating, it's funny because this actually leads into one of my other popular opinions, but, like, when you are eating, when you're eating, like, whatever you want, for, like, three meals a day, whatever amount you want, like, food actually starts to taste less good versus, like, if you, right, let yourself get hungry before a meal.
Right. Honestly, I am not hungry enough to eat three meals a day, like, as a human being. I don't even have the hunger signals to eat three meals a day.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, to me, like, that's actually, like, one of my big popular opinions is that the whole three meals a day thing, like, I mean, unless you're a nursing mother or a lumberjack, that may not necessarily be what you need. I mean, if you look at history, people have not always eaten three meals a day. A lot of where the three meals a day comes from is, like, just, like, industrial revolution, when there's breaks from work, you know, and it's also different for, like, people actually doing. I mean, I think the error that people make is to assume that, like, you know, like, we're living in a day and age where, thankfully, people have been relieved of the need. Like, not everyone, but, like, a lot more people than any other time in human history have been relieved of the need to do manual labor every day to survive, right? So it's like, the meal schedule, the calorie needs, all of the things that the people who really needed that sort of, like, that needed to actually do manual labor 8 to 12 hours a day to survive, that is not necessarily going to be the diet that, like, you know, the local receptionist at like the dentist's office who's, you know, just like
the local podcaster sitting on our ass needs to get by. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think that it's interesting. Someone put in, like, I called out for questions for a solo episode, and someone put like wanted to know what I eat in a day. And it's like, honestly, like it's so random. What I have no sort of schedule. I have no sort of like, oh, I, you know, eat these set things. But one thing that I can say that I do is I never overeat ever. Cause I don't even want to, I don't even have the desire to. And I just also like, I truly wait till I'm actually physically hungry to eat food. Like I do not eat food before I'm physically hungry. And maybe that's like sacrilegious to say in 2021. Maybe that's not body positive enough. I don't know. Maybe I get canceled. But those are some hard and fast rules to live by for me.
Wait, can we talk about the fact that we've come full circle to like from like my introduction on this podcast, which came from like you and Chandler like making fun of my eating habits, to like me like expounding like Socrates like about
what's that's true. That's true. I mean, you've never been afraid to tell it like it is and keep it real when it comes to all things, you know, bodies and
food related.
Yes.
Yeah,
for sure. And you know, what's funny, not to like keep harping on this, but, I remember listening to a Jillian Michaels podcast, and this lady called in and she was like, I can't lose weight, I eat so healthy but I can't lose weight. And she was like, wait, what do you mean? She's like, well, for breakfast I have an egg white omelet, and for lunch I have salmon and quinoa, and for dinner I have, you know, and it was just like brown rice and chicken and like just, and she was like, well, if you aren't eating in a deficit, you're never gonna lose weight, like it doesn't matter if it's all the right stuff.
Right.
And that's just like the harsh reality that you, if you want to lose weight, you have to come to grips with. And
have you heard about the professor, that famous professor who did the Twinkie diet?
No.
Okay, so this is actually a pretty famous story, but like there is so much I feel like there is the all of this Mediterranean diet, Gary Taubes, cough, like, you know, like for the podcast listeners, Lauren used to like call me about the gospel of Gary Taubes.
Oh my gosh, this is so long ago. Yes, I used to be like so on the low carb train. Oh my gosh,
yes,
worshiping in the altar. But
like,
you know,
all these people coffee. Pitching. Yeah, all these people pitching all these different. Like, here's the thing: not everybody wants to or needs to lose weight. Fine, but like if you do want to, like if somebody does want to lose weight, like, you know, there's all these people pitching all of these diets or like saying like if you eat these foods you will lose weight. The thing is, this professor of nutrition, I could look him up, but this is like a documented fact, he actually he was so sick of like all of these diet books out there making these claims that like, oh, if you eat these foods or this Mediterranean diet or that, like you're gonna lose weight, that he did this diet of, I think it was literally 1200 calories a day of only Twinkies, right?
Yeah.
And he did it for like several months, and he had like 1200 calories a day of Twinkies and a multivitamin, right? Mm-hmm. And in that period of time, he lost like something like 20 pounds, and all of his blood markers, like his serum cholesterol, all of those things, those improved the way that you would expect to see with somebody losing excess body weight.
Right.
And he lost the weight. Like
health improved.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that like 1200 calories a day of like Twinkies is like the best for your health in the long run, but it is right. Really like when I do, I think, you know, for the people who are out there with an eye to losing weight, it really is simple as like a gas tank and your car. Like, how often do you fill up the gas tank? How much do you drive? Those are really the only questions.
Right.
It doesn't mean that like eating 12 Twinkies a day, like your muffler won't fall off in like 100,000 miles, but like you will lose weight if you fuel up less than you need fuel.
Right. And I personally think that one of the reasons why it's so hard for people to lose weight is because they get distracted with those diets that promise, you know, they like, right. they sing that siren song of if you only eat these certain things, you can have as much as you want or eat to satiety in every situation as, you know, as much as you want. And because, and, but the thing about that is that those diets actually take effort. So it takes effort to like cut certain things out. It takes effort, even though you get to, you know, eat as much as you want. I say that in air quotes, but ultimately it doesn't end up working. And then you're so exhausted from having done these diets that don't work.
Right.
That you don't have the stamina to then do what does work, but, and also takes work, which is just putting less in literally, you know? And that's like my big advice. When people kind of like have asked about that before, it's like, literally just count, just count your calories and eat less and go in a deficit and, you know, just like, just bite the bullet and do it and do not bullshit around because it will just, you'll just spin your wheels and it'll get exhausting. I mean, this is what happens when Chandler's not, when our cancel police is not here. Okay. We go completely off the rails.
It's either this or the grassy knoll, like the JFK assassination.
Okay. Wait, can I tell you something that I want your opinion on?
Yeah.
I had a similar experience. This is kind of a segue. So I've recently, I'm now in Utah and I just had this moment when I went to Target recently and I saw just all these young mothers. They were young women with long hair. They looked very pure, looked just very pure of heart and soul. They had young children and they were well-groomed. And I just had this moment of just thinking that maybe America was going to make it. Like, it was like, oh, wait, this is where our country, like, this is where, like, the future generations are actually being raised and reared. Like, this is where the values of our forefathers are still, you know, close to the breast. Okay.
Yeah.
And when you come from me, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and you, the hell state that is Oregon, I'm pretty sure it's a heartwarming experience to go to the Orem, Utah Target.
I never knew how good I had it till I moved out of the state.
Honestly. Right. Yes. I mean, these girls, they're not being hardened in the workplace in corporate America. They are just at a Target at 2 p.m. with a toddler enjoying life with their long blonde hair. And it's a sight for sore eyes.
You know, it's really interesting because it's like, you know, I think something that gets lost in the conversation is like a lot of the, like, if we're talking about like alternatives to motherhood, like a lot of these jobs that are like the alternative to motherhood, it's like you're going to, you know, like you're going to pay the piper somewhere, right? And it's just like, I'm not saying like, look, I personally intentionally do not have any children and I'm fully devoted to my career. So I want to just say that before I say all this stuff and come off like a total hypocrite. But like, you know, I guess my career gives me a different perspective because it is, I mean, I probably have the career that's the closest thing, like the closest link to motherhood career you can have, right? Like, you know, it's like the most focused on that. And like, you know, I mean, if it's the choice between like, I'm, you know, everyone, like, here's the thing, what I love is I love being in 2021 and I love that women can actually make that choice for themselves, right? Because I don't think it's good to live in a world where the default is that has to be the life you live, right?
100%. Because like, that's stifling in a prison,
right?
In a cage,
right?
For sure.
But like when you see like women embracing that, and like women who just like have known since they're a little girl, they just want to be a mother, and they just like, you know, they just have toddlers, and they're just like just 20 something, and they're just like, you know, like there's nothing more heartwarming. And it's like it's really hard for me to say, like, you know, like that a lot of jobs are gonna be more fulfilling than raising some adorable toddler who you love. I mean, it's really hard for me to imagine that.
Honestly, I think where we lost the plot was in telling women that like going and working at an investment bank or like going and being any sort of, you know, tycoon.
Yeah.
In most cases, is going to long-term provide the kind of meaning that, like, yeah, actually, you know, creating a legacy and family will. And
right.
And that is, go ahead.
Yeah. Like, and like, for example, like, I don't think a lot of men's jobs, like, are necessarily going to give
not
them meaning the same way that their family will. Like, you know, family creates meaning way better than most jobs do.
100%. I think someone has to do it. Someone's got to put, you know, bacon on the table or whatever right, the phrase is. And I think it was a nice societal expectation that it wasn't the girl for a long time.
Right. And like if you look at, like, okay, so that's what I think the problem that we have, like, okay, so if I'm just going to, like, getting into more unpopular opinions, and maybe this is a popular opinion, I don't know. But it's like, when you look at, so, like, when you look at, like, the movement that's, like, okay, so the feminist movement or whatever that's led to, maybe in some cases, a woman who might be happier as a stay-at-home mom feeling like she has to go out and get some corporate job and do something that she really doesn't want to or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you look at some of the origins of that movement or some of the excesses they were correcting, I mean, you don't have to go too far back. Like for example, if you look at this country in the 70s, right? In the 70s, there were places a woman couldn't even, I think, like, have a checking account in her name, right?
Right, right.
Like, you look at, like the problem is I think with, like, and, like, you look at, like, any movement for, like, justice or equality or anything in this country, it's like 9 times out of 10 they have origins that are very well
it's needed
100%. Very well justified in, yeah, in, like, excesses they're correcting. The problem is like, to some degree, like, once you have, like, a movement for justice and it's like, you know, you start getting organizations, you start getting people on the payroll, and, like, you start creating a situation where even once the original goals of this movement are accomplished, it's like, now we have, like, people whose career it is to keep pushing new goals for this movement, even if they aren't necessarily.
Oh, interesting.
Like, yeah, everyone's, you know what I mean? Like, it becomes right, like any, like, I've heard a saying before that the first duty of any organization is to just maintain its own existence, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why, like, you know, I think we should all be wary of any new bureaucracies being formed or any new, like, you know, oversight committees being formed, because suddenly that's a bunch of jobs that people are going to be trying to protect. So they want to keep that,
right,
whatever they have any sort of jurisdiction over or oversight over, whatever that problem is they're trying to solve, it's going to be in their best interest for that problem to continue to be a problem, not right, to ever solve it. Because once it's solved, the job goes away.
Yeah.
So, exactly. Although I want to say, I think that's actually one of the great things about living today in 2021. I do think it's the best time to be alive, especially as a woman, because, like, for me, I have this podcast, I have my other business that's purely online, and I love doing these things, and I will definitely do them when I'm a mother. Like, I love making money. I love having a business. And I think that there's so many opportunities now where you don't have to go slave away for Goldman Sachs 14 hours a day to make good money. Like,
right,
you can offer value at, you know, in your own unique individual way from your laptop and have economic freedom and have independence and all that stuff. And also the flexibility to, you know, pop out some spawn and, yeah. Anyway. Okay. Let me give you an unpopular opinion I have. Okay.
Okay.
I don't think I do not think that everything happens for a reason. I do not think that there is some sort of cosmic justice or any sort of rhyme, reason, riddle, whatever it is, that can explain or, you know, that can make us feel better about things that happen. I think that life is cruelly, cruelly random, and it is all just chance. And there is just no, when people say everything happens for a reason, it actually almost, like, makes me want to throw up, because it just, not really, but, like, it just irritates me, because I just think, okay, that it's cringy. It's a cringy belief. Like, how can you actually believe that when you look at, like, the scope of human experience and suffering, and you realize, like, how bad some people have it compared to how great some people have it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Like, I'm with you in the sense that, like, if you want to, if people say that from the point of view of, like, okay, there's this third party who's orchestrating everything and, like, making sure that, like, any, you know, I don't know, some child goes blind, but it's, like, for a greater cause or, you know, something horrific.
Or if it's, like, you didn't get into your dream college because you were meant to, you know, stay home and go to community college and meet, you know, the love of your life, you know, at Trader Joe's on a Saturday where otherwise you would have been off in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you know, that kind of thing. Like, yeah. I feel like there's always like, oh, you know, it's so sad that this tragic thing happened to you, but everything happens for a reason. Like, I hate that kind of like intellectual laziness, which is how I see it.
Okay, that's interesting. So the way that I see that saying is like, that's a saying like everything happens for a reason or whatever. That's something that's like, I think is a really, so as far as like metaphysically speaking, my metaphysical belief is that everything happens because everything that can happen will happen either in this universe or another one that's pretty similar. I just view all outcomes as inevitable. So just putting that aside, now if we want to go to the saying everything happens for a reason, I view that as one of those beliefs that is extremely healthy and extremely like extremely beneficial for someone to like carry within themselves for like their own life and like everything that happens to them. Like, for example, like let's say even something totally awful happens to you, right? Like let's say you get thrown in prison for like 40 years for something you didn't do, you're put in solitary confinement, something awful, right? Right? Yeah. Something awful, right? Yeah. You'll be better off if you carry that belief you're talking about. Like, if you believe,
yeah,
like...
but it's not true.
The thing is, like...
Like, I guess you will also be better off if you think that, like, you are... I don't know. Like, if I think in my mind that I am the hottest person in the world, even when I'm 90... I guess in some ways, yeah, this inflated ego and sense of confidence will make me better off, but it's not based in reality.
Yeah. So I see what you're saying. However, like, okay, so first of all, like the objective belief about who's the hottest person in the world, like whether that's like Megan Fox or whatever you want to say, right? Like what you're talking about, the objective reality, that's just a consensus belief among like, you know, the majority of people or whatever, right? You know, like, so insofar as like that's true, like insofar as that's true, I mean, like, let's look at the last couple people we elected president. Those are the like, I mean, like all of them, like, I mean, you know, so I guess I would say is like, you're right. That's not, if you believe like, okay, I've been thrown in prison. I'm totally innocent of this. I think you're going to come out the other end of that experience if you hold that belief of like everything happens for a reason and like everything like has meaning. If you hold that belief, you'll actually create that meaning and you'll come out the other end like better off if you have that meaning, right? If you have that belief, right? But it's also an obnoxious thing to tell to somebody else. Like if somebody else like has like, you know, somebody in their family die and you say like, oh, everything happens to her for a reason. Like, yeah, sure. That's obnoxious. I'm with you on that. But I think like, if you actually believe that for yourself in your own life, regardless of whether or not it's true, you'll be better off.
I think our opinions diverge is I don't think that people are better off if they are living their life based on things that are false. Like even if there are useful fictions and they help you lead a more mentally like, you know, happy, stable life. Yeah. I don't see happier and more stable as necessarily better if it's based on lies. And I think that like applies to, you know, a lot of useful fictions that I think are kind of like, you know, the opiates of the people, as the phrase goes. And I think it's always better to confront the harsh reality of life and like actually confront the human condition and look at it and actually reckon with it then live in like a Pollyanna, like, you know, fake view of the world.
Is it though? Is it though? Is it really though? I don't know. I'm not so sure.
Because then you're like living in the full human experience, like with the full range of human experience. You're actually like seeing the world for what it is.
Okay. I mean, I see what you're saying. I'm going to co-sign that that's an obnoxious thing to tell other people that something negative has happened to, or it's probably an obnoxious belief to preach to the world at large, but it's hard for me to see how like that's going to like, it's hard for me to how to see if somebody genuinely holds that belief that like, okay, everything negative that happens to me is for a reason and I can create meaning in it, or there is meaning in it inherently. It's hard for me to see how that would be negatively impact someone to believe that. That actually seems like, I'm not saying I actually have that belief. I'm actually more defaulting towards you, where it's just like something crappy happens to me and I just like have a tantrum and just like, just like
confront the reality.
Like, wail at the universe and curse everything, like, yeah, right. Like, but I think, like, I honestly think if I could get on that train, if I could get on the everything happens for a reason and it was good that this happened train, and sometimes I am on that train for a few stops, like I actually feel mentally healthier and happier during those times, and like it doesn't, like it kind of gives you the, it can kind of give you the motivation to like struggle on when things seem hopeless.
Hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying. 100%.
Living in truth is overrated to some degree. I mean, I do it too much. That's why I'm saying it's overrated.
The truth is overrated. Okay, we'll have to just agree to disagree. I do want to tell you about a memory I have of you as a child.
Okay.
I remember when you told me that the smartest person in your high school was a genius, and he had devoted his entire life. You told this to me very casually when I was a young child. He had devoted his entire life to blowing up the world, blowing up the sun on Christmas Day. Do you remember this?
Yes. No, I absolutely remember this. And this guy went on to MIT. Like, no, I'm serious. Like, this guy's like a nuclear physicist now. And that's what he used to tell us every. Like, I have multiple people who attended school with me who can corroborate this. That's what he used to tell us in PE all the time. Like, and in our, like, other classes, he would tell us, one day I'm going to blow up the sun on Christmas Day.
I feel like he would tell us this, like, almost every Christmas thereafter after meeting this person. At least for a couple years. And let's just say it's a frightening tale, especially when, I mean, I was, you know, what, 6 and you were 16? Or I guess, no, we're not that far apart. I was 10 and you were 16.
Yeah, no, like I have nothing to say other than like this person, I mean, this person was obviously like the smartest person in like Dana Hills High School. Like, I mean, he was obviously like, I mean, yeah, he had well into the triple digit IQ. Like, you know, obviously I'm just hoping he like got a girlfriend or like change goals. He certainly didn't.
That would be like the ultimate.
Like, yeah, no, he went to like. I remember I looked him up at one point. He went to like Caltech or MIT and like went into some sort of like nuclear physics specialty or something like that. So I don't have any like good news to give on that front.
That would be the ultimate incel move. You know what I mean? Just like blow up the sun on Christmas Day. That would really show him.
It's what's that quote from Star Wars? It's like, it's as if a thousand Chads and Stacys cried out at once and were instantly silenced.
Oh my gosh. Okay, what else? Anything else? Any childhood memories? Anything? Oh, someone wanted us to talk about, you know, it's the never-ending subject on this podcast. I feel like we've covered it, but they always want more. What was growing up Mormon like? Ashley, what was it like for you?
You know, okay, I have a different view of this now that I'm older. I'm going to say overall, if I could, like, press the button to not grow up Mormon, I would not press that button. I would not.
Interesting.
I'm glad I grew up Mormon. You know, like, honestly, like, I think like what convinced me that it was like a good idea to grow up Mormon was like going out into the world, meeting other people, seeing how they raise their children, seeing stuff like, I don't know, like parents like smoking weed and like being hip with their children, I think is what convinced me that like
for sure. Maybe like maybe it's worth three hour church. Yeah, on Sunday.
That's just like seeing like parents like try to be groovy with their children was like, maybe I picked the right door. So I want to preface it with that. But I would say that the main, and also the other really positive thing about growing up Mormon is like, I mean, I'm sure Lauren is, I mean, maybe Lauren can corroborate this. Like, I was not like, unlike Courtney, I think Lauren was a poetry nerd, but like, unlike Courtney, I was not like one of the popular kids in high school.
Wow, thanks. Okay.
I mean, weren't you like part of the poetry club or something?
Oh my gosh. I was an honor choir, if you want to talk about it.
Okay. So if we want to talk about kids that got invited to parties in high school, Courtney and maybe Nick are like
Chandler was cool in high school.
Okay, Chandler was cool in high school. Okay, fine. Yeah. Okay, so I don't know. I was long gone by the time Chandler was in high school. So I don't know. But yeah. So not being a kid that was like among the popular thing, like it did definitely like grow up more. It created like a cohort of like same age children who were like duty bound to be like nice
your
to
friend.
Me. Cool.
Yes, so, for sure.
So that was nice, right? Like I had like some kids that I had like friendly interactions with based on that. So that was good. So okay, so it kind of created a little friend crew for me, and it also like you know, like I wasn't like, you know, I didn't have like the type of mom who like, you know, when I was 16, like came to my room to like smoke weed and like vibrate or whatever, which like, you know, whatever, like I'm eternally grateful for like avoiding that whole mess. Okay, good. Thank you, Mormonism, for that. The negative part of Mormonism, the strongly negative part is just a lot of time. Like this has changed. This has changed since I don't attend Mormon services anymore, but it was like 3 hours every Sunday, an hour every morning, Monday through Friday, and then like 1 to 2 hours one night of the week for like the youth group activity. So between like seminary, church meetings, like it was just like, I just felt like, yeah, like it definitely feels like, and then when you add in like high school and like sitting in, you know,
class all day,
most of the day, and then homework, like I definitely, you know, you grow up feeling like what is leisure time? Like what, like when do you ever have like a moment to just like decompress and like, you know, like what, not be in a meeting somewhere. That was probably the most difficult part of growing up Mormon. It was just the meetings every, like once.
So many meetings.
And it would have been one thing if it was just church every week, but most churches are only an hour, and that's those 3 hours, fine, I could have handled it. But it was like the seminary every morning that was just like, it just made it very hard for me.
Well, and okay, so this might have been unique to our family, but I would say one of the hardest things for me, because I'm a person who gets very tired. Like when I get tired at night, it's time for bed. I do not have much like buffer. I do not gradually go, you know, into that good night.
You'll just like, we're all watching a movie and you're like, sorry, I'm done. I'm going to bed.
Yeah, exactly. And I abscond. Before we could go to bed in our family, we would have to have family prayers. Like, and if you went to bed before, if you didn't like corral the entire family together for family prayers.
Oh yeah. You couldn't go to bed.
You would be pulled out of bed for family prayers at some point. You'd be woken up for family prayers, and you would have gotten a little in trouble. So to go to bed at night, it was like a 20-minute exercise in getting like all like 8 members of our family, like in one room to say a prayer. And that's one of the things that's still just like, to this day, I look back and I'm just like, what a pain. Like it's what, there's so much friction. Like there was just so much friction all the time. Yeah. You know, and that's like, I think that's like, honestly, the one thing that if I'm going to talk about Grant Mormon, it's just like there's always friction. If there's something you want to do, it's going to go against the, like, your tank top's against the rule, your PG-13 movie's against the rule. There's so many rules.
Wait a second. I think I have a story here that an old-timey Ashley story. Maybe you didn't even
know. Love it.
Okay, so let's talk about like, so by the time I went to BYU, I had had my fill of meetings, right?
Yeah.
But one of the conditions for enrollments of BYU is regular church attendance, regular, and if you're not taking a religion class, you have to attend like one of the religious classes, right? Like,
right.
You're always taking like a religious class, right? And so I saw like before me like an eternity of meetings, and I just, you know, and it's like don't get me wrong, Mormons have great values, but like they're, at least while I was part of it, like they're, the lessons, they're very, we're covering, once you've been in it, like in, you know, going through the full program, like till you're 18, from the moment you're born till you're 18 years old, you're covering the same ground over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Right, right.
Going through the same chapters in the Book of Mormon, all of these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I rigged up this hoodie, right?
Okay. Oh, I know exactly where this is going. Continue.
And I basically, like, with my sewing skills, like, sewed, like, this, like, so I loaded up, like, this iPod with every single Harry Potter audiobook, right? It was, like, this, like, gray Hollister hoodie, right? And, like, I think there's a picture out there in the wild on Facebook of me in this gray Hollister hoodie and Courtney in a black and white striped t-shirt, right? And I sewed this cord like up through the length of the sleeve of this hoodie that would connect to the iPod. And like I had it so I could, like, you know, if you put your elbow on a desk and then just put your hand in your palm of your hand, so I could like listen to Harry Potter.
Oh my God.
On command during
that. Incredible.
That was my little jerry-rigged invention. That's how I got through a few more years of meetings.
I definitely was one to sneak up an Apple white wired headphone through my blonde hair. That was always an easy thing to do, because especially if you put it underneath your shirt and then you just had the wire coming out, you know, from like your neck to your ear.
Right.
That I tried a few times, but especially if we were like in sacrament meeting with our parents, the fear of getting caught was palpable. It always, like, I couldn't actually enjoy whatever I was listening to.
Kids these days, they just need like a feathered hairdo and like an AirPod. Like, I have to still record uphill for like.
honestly, to listen to like a pre-downloaded, like, recording, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There was no streaming in those days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it was all just, like, MP3 audiobooks or whatever.
Let's actually tell one of the best Ashley stories there ever was. This is a good one to end the podcast. So one of the family folklore stories is that when Ashley was a kid, there was one time when my parents went out of town, and Ashley was, like, probably old enough, probably 16, 17, to babysit them. Well, they were dropped off at church. And do you want to tell the story, Ashley? Do you know where
I'm going? Wait a second. I'm not sure. Like, this is not the story where I scared Courtney, because I was much younger in that story.
No. This is the story where I guess mom and dad came back and they heard that Ashley, when she took her siblings to church that Sunday, in the middle of a sacrament meeting, in the middle of a sacred church service that's very quiet and very, like, sober, she takes out a can of soda and pops it for the entire congregation to hear. I mean, that is just not done. Okay. Mormons don't have coffee and donuts. They sit in their formal attire and listen soberly to the meeting at hand.
Do you know how when you're like trying to crack a can of soda, like, slowly, it ends up actually like making like a lot more noise? Like, when you're like, to like pull the tab up a little and it just goes shh. One solid seconds, and then like after you've let all that air out, you've still got to really pop. Like, yeah, it was,
you
like
still
that.
Have to have the lid, like, you know, metal scrape against as it, you know, as it exits. Yeah, I mean, it's a whole process.
And you didn't rip off the Band-Aid, I'm sure. I'm sure it was like an excruciating 15 seconds for the entire audience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I remember that.
Oh, wow. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for filling in for Chandler. Truly anytime. Delightful. You're amazing. Maybe I can even convince you to do it again for the Patreon. But it'll probably be just be me, folks. But maybe I'll get you back.
Okay, awesome.
Love you so much. It's been fabulous.
Okay, everyone, love this.
Ashley, but you are famous for skincare. You have an amazing Instagram account. Where can people find you?
People can find me if they want to find my skincare company. That's at johnsdaughterapothecaries.com. Lauren will put the link in the show notes. And if you want to find like my skincare advice Instagram, that's at soap and water pretty.
There it is. Love you.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
That's all for now, folks. Don't forget, give us a 5-star review, hit us up on Instagram at PopApologists, and we will see you next week, live every Wednesday.